This month, I'm very fortunate to have Brad King as my special guest. Brad King is a fitness expert and a performance nutritionist. He holds a master's in nutritional science and is certified by the International Sports Sciences Association as a master of fitness science and a certified specialist in performance nutrition. Brad is the author of the international bestseller Fat Wars, 45 Days to Transform Your Body, and BioAge, 10 Steps to a Younger You. He was also the host of the popular daily Canadian radio show Body Talk for 3 years. Brad is a member of the expert editorial advisory panel selected by the Canadian Health Food Association to assist in the editing and promotion of the CHFA Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program. He has also appeared as a leading health and fitness expert on national TV in both Canada and the U.S. and is a regular contributor to numerous national health journals. Welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Brad.
Well, Corey, thank you so much for having me as your guest this month.
It's my pleasure. Brad, how did you first get involved in the health and fitness profession?
Well, you know, Corey, I wish it was a happy-go-lucky type of story, but unfortunately it wasn't. And I think for many people that have really become impassioned in this industry, I think it's usually because something very traumatic, in a sense, has happened in their lives, and they were, you know, impassioned to find out why this thing was happening or why it did happen and how to make sure that it, you know, it never happens again. And going back quite a few years ago, I actually lost both of my parents within the same year to cancer. And prior to that, I had lost a lot of family members to cancer. So around that time, I really realized that there was this, you know, very large genetic predisposition to having cancer at one time or another in my life and in many of my family members' lives. And I realized that I certainly did not want to pass away at a young age like 59 like my mother did, or even 76 as my father did. And that really impassioned me to get into the research of why, you know, the human body breaks down so quickly, and really, are there ways once and for all in which we can stop the negative processes from taking place and really taking a hold of us? In other words, do we have a control over the outcome of our genetic so-called predisposition to disease, or do we not? And I found out through my research we definitely do.
Let's talk about your personal training program, the program that you use yourself to stay well and fit. How often do you work out, and what does your workout consist of?
Well, Corey, like you, you know, workout in a very real sense is my life. And, you know, I want to mention something here before we go any further. And you remember the two of us had a conversation at the Canadian Health Food Association right before one of our lectures. This was about a year ago. And I remember I was in the washroom and I overheard you speaking to someone. And the person was asking you how important exercise was to you. And I remember your comment. It's stuck in my head like nothing, you know, ever has before. And what you replied to the fellow was, exercise is actually almost, if you know, maybe even more important than my family is to me. And at the time, Corey, I thought, you know, boy, that's kind of an arrogant statement, you know, coming from this guy that I admire so much. And when I thought about it a little later, I realized quickly how important and how truthful that statement was, because what you meant by saying that was, without exercise and exercise being a part of your life like it is a part of my life, you are no longer Corey Hawley and I'm no longer Brad King. We can't be who we are without doing what we love and without, you know, doing what makes us whole. And this is exactly what exercise is to me as well. Having said that, I exercise approximately 7 days a week. Now, I don't want people to think that I overtrain out there, because I'm certainly not a proponent of overtraining. When I say I exercise about 7 days a week, I actually exercise with progressive resistance exercise, meaning weight training, approximately 5 days a week. I usually take the weekends off, but I do cardio activity on the weekends, usually low impact. I don't run. I go for very fast-paced walks. And I actually go for walks approximately every single day. I do a walk here where I live in Victoria, which is a 10K walk, and it's around a lake called Elk Lake. And it's absolutely beautiful because you're in touch with Mother Nature, and at the same time you get the thinking processes going. You get to get the oxygen coming into the body to refuel all of your 100 trillion cells. And after that walk, which takes me about an hour and a half, I feel absolutely alive. It's such an important part of my life.
So it's a combination of high-quality oxygen, getting out into nature, just being alone with self. Do you think that we get enough of that these days?
Absolutely not. I would say the majority of the population is suffering from a disorder called hypokinesis. And, you know, hypokinesis is really just a fancy way of saying we do not move our bodies enough anymore. We're designed to move. We've got these two arms and these two legs and an incredible machine that, you know, really is the only machine we're ever going to have. And we are sedentary individuals, and we're teaching our children how to be sedentary as well. You know, we're replacing things like a baseball bat with a joystick. And, you know, kids are watching TV for hours on end, and they're learning by our example. And when we're lethargic and when we, you know, constantly complain about never having enough time to do the things that really should matter the most to us, which are proper exercise, eating properly, and for the most part, I'm not talking about being a saint here, but I'm talking about living a life worth living. I mean, living this life, knowing that what you put into your body today and, you know, the very thoughts and the types of exercise and everything you do to yourself every moment of every day is going to impact how you live your life tomorrow. And I think people still do not grasp that concept.
Now, you've written a great book called Fat Wars, which I've had the privilege of reading and really enjoyed it. And it sold well over 100,000 copies in Canada alone. What makes Fat Wars so different from all the other weight loss books out there?
Well, you know, Corey, I'm really glad you asked that, because that actually does come up quite a lot in interviews, because, I mean, you don't have to go any further. Just look on your local bookshelves, and you're going to see that there's a new diet book popping up almost every other month. For those of you who have read the book Fat Wars, you'll attest to the fact that I am not a proponent of diets. As a matter of fact, I don't believe in diets at all, because many times over, diets make you become, in a very real sense, what I call a smaller, fatter person. And the reason is they go against your very genetic predisposition to store fat in the first place. We have to understand that we evolved from 40,000-year-old genetic structures. You know, in a very real sense, we are living with these Fred Flintstone bodies, but we're living in a George Jetson world. And, you know, when you lower your caloric consumption beyond a certain amount for the body will take drastic measures to maintain its 30 billion fat cells at their peak capacity, because those 30 billion fat cells inherited this incredible storage mechanism in order for your survival. That's why we're all here right now, because we had this incredible survival mechanism to get us through these times of famine. We don't have famine anymore here in North America. Fat Wars is really how and why we store fat so easily. But more importantly, it's really a book on how to mobilize and burn the fat that we're now living with. And, you know, having said that, I think people have to understand that the majority of the population, Corey, is absolutely obsessed with the word weight. I mean, how many times have you heard people say, I have to lose 5 or 10 pounds? But you never hear people say, I have to lose 5 or 10 pounds of fat. I think the real question the myriad dieters in the market should be asking themselves is really, where is the majority of the weight loss coming from on these diets? And I think the sad fact remains that most of the weight that people lose drastically on these diets come from lean tissues, mostly in the form of muscle tissue. And when people lose their skeletal muscle mass, they also lose their body's ability to burn calories in the resting position. In science, we call this the basal metabolism, the rate at which you can burn calories in a complete day doing absolutely nothing. The more muscle tissue on your frame, the higher your metabolic engines become and the more calories you can burn throughout the day. So, you know, the most important thing to remember when people want to lose body fat is that they should maintain their musculature at all costs.
So the focus should be on fat as a composition of matter as opposed to weight in relation to, say, gravity?
Absolutely, because it's the body fat percentage. It's when people get a lean body percentage analysis done, that is the true value of how they are doing on a specific dietary strategy or an exercise strategy. If they just stand on a scale and go, boy, I've only lost 5 pounds, or you know, even worse, I've gained 5 pounds. Half the time, people don't understand that if they're on a proper regimen, they're actually going to gain a little bit of weight at the beginning because they're going to be increasing their muscle mass, and muscle always weighs more than fat, and this is actually a good thing. So people should throw away their bathroom scales.
Well, it's like the trick question. What weighs more, a pound of fat or a pound of muscle?
Exactly.
They both weigh the same, right?
Exactly.
But volume is what matters.
What burns more? Yeah, fat is an inert substance. It sits there. It requires very little energy. It does not utilize very much energy. It contains very little energy-producing centers called mitochondria, whereas muscle contains thousands of these tiny little spark plugs that burn a tremendous amount of calories.
Doesn't fat take up a lot more space? I've heard it said that it takes about 5 times more space than muscle.
It absolutely does. And, you know, I think there's a very big misconception out there when people try to lose fat, so to speak. We never lose our fat. We're born more or less with these 30 billion fat cells. But each and every one of those fat cells, Corey, has the ability to expand up to 1,000 times in volume. And we still have the ability to replicate those cells so that they can divide and produce even more fat cells if we need them to. In other words, we literally have a never-ending capacity for the storage of body fat.
Wow, that's fascinating. Now, in your book, you have a chapter called Constant Craving, where you discuss the role of serotonin.
Yeah.
Can you talk about serotonin and its role in appetite and sugar craving?
Absolutely. You know, Corey, there are so many neurotransmitters the body and the brain produces. Neurotransmitters are these, chemical messengers that are produced in the brain or in the body, and they relay messages from one neuron or one nerve cell to another cell in the body. And out of over 30 known neurotransmitters the brain and the body produces, serotonin is the most important in terms of appetite and sleep regulation. I mean, serotonin does many more things to the body than these two, but these are the most important things in terms of the amount of foods that we crave and the amount of fat that the body carries. We know, for instance, that when people are very depressed, they'll go to their doctor, and the doctor will usually prescribe something for very low serotonin levels called an SSRI, or a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. What that does, and you know, we know these by the pharmaceutical names of Prozac and Zoloft and Meridian and you know these such things. And what they do is they don't necessarily manufacture more of this substance in the brain. All they do is they recycle the existing serotonin so that people feel a little more balanced or satiated. When we have imbalances of serotonin levels, like probably the majority of the population, according to a lot of researchers, say that we do, what happens is we become very aggravated. We become, depressed. We have, very large fluctuations in our weight. We have high appetite, pain sensation, different types of, we may suffer from sleep irregularities, and many of us will have these insatiable cravings, especially for the wrong types of foods. And when I say the wrong types of foods, obviously, you know, I'm not talking about fruits and vegetables and lean proteins. I'm talking about the high glycemic carbohydrates, the carbohydrates that mostly are man-made, that have been stripped of their natural nutrition, their hull, their seed, their germ, their grain, their fiber. And really what they do is they release themselves as very quick forms of sugar for the body. When we have very low serotonin levels, one of the first things we crave are these sweet, high glycemic foods. And the reason is because we are, in a sense, self-regulating or self-medicating the body by reaching for these sugary foods. We've known about this since the 70s, and in the 1990s, there was a husband and wife team from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology by the name of Dr. Richard and Judith Wortman. They're one of the premier research teams on serotonin, And they found that when rats were given carbohydrates in the absence of proteins, they were able to raise their serotonin levels very, very quickly. When they had protein coming into the meal at the same time, because the various amino acids or the building blocks of that protein compete for passage into the brain. And the amino acid or the building block of protein called tryptophan, which is the precursor to serotonin, usually gets bullied out of the way and is not allowed into the brain when there's other forms of protein in the body. So when we crave these carbohydrates, what happens is we stimulate our insulin response from our pancreas to bring down that blood sugar level. And as insulin is driving all of those sugars and the amino acids and the fats into the cells of the body, it usually leaves tryptophan unopposed to get into the blood-brain barrier. In other words, tryptophan is no longer bullied out of the way. It can pass through that blood-brain barrier, and it can manufacture more serotonin in the brain. So once again, we feel satiated, we feel very balanced, but unfortunately, this doesn't last very long because we go into a very low blood sugar level, and we crave even more sugars.
So what's the best way to get tryptophan in the diet? It sounds like if I just take tryptophan, then I can remedy my problem.
Well, you can in a sense, but the problem is, you know, tryptophan is a banned substance in North America, and the only way you can get it is through prescription. You can, however, get another substance called 5-HTP or 5-hydroxytryptophan, which comes from a herb called Griffonia, which is actually from a shrub found off the Ivory Coast. And 5-HTP is basically what tryptophan converts into before it converts into serotonin. However, you know, you always want to look to natural means in which to get these substances into the body as much as possible, and that's where your diet comes in. Tryptophan, unfortunately, is the least common found amino acid in protein. Even if you take a very high protein intake like yourself or myself, Corey, we usually only get about 2 grams, if we're lucky, of tryptophan in an overall diet. And out of those 2 grams we get, if we're a stressed out individual, and you know, let's face it, with today's society, approximately 90% of the population is facing too much stress overload, what happens is most of that tryptophan gets converted in biochemical pathways to manufacture other substances in the body. One of them is vitamin B3 or niacinamide, and even the coenzyme form of B3, which is NAD or nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. So it's very important to realize that you need as much of these protein foods as possible, and you know, tryptophan is found in the meats, in the chickens, in the fishes, as well as in whey protein, spelled W-H-E-Y, that is very high in alpha-lactalbumin levels. Alpha-lactalbumin, one of the components of whey, contains one of nature's highest sources of tryptophan. Soy is also a very good form of tryptophan, and so are bananas, especially the skin.
So this protein, this whey protein, is a good source of tryptophan and other essential and non-essential amino acids.
Definitely.
Now that brings to mind, like, why is protein so important when it comes to revving up somebody's metabolic rate? How does that help someone burn fat?
Well, you know, protein is important for a few reasons, Corey. I think, you know, one of the most common reasons is because if we have high quality or high biologically valued protein, meaning, you know, the protein is measured on what's called a BV index or a biologically valued index, not all proteins are created equal. We know that meat-based or animal-based proteins are much higher quality to the body than plant-based proteins are to the body because they have a higher biological value. Protein, what it does is, number one, it increases a hormone from the pancreas called glucagon. Now, glucagon is an opposing hormone to the storage hormone of the body, which is insulin. Insulin is responsible for storing blood sugars and storing fat in the body. Insulin stimulates an enzyme in the body called lipoprotein lipase. And lipoprotein lipase is so powerful that it's been, you know, often called by researchers as the gatekeeper of fat storage. And that's stimulated when we have, you know, high incoming carbohydrates without enough protein. When we have protein coming in through the diet, we stimulate an opposing hormone to insulin called glucagon. And glucagon is the mobilizing hormone of the body. It initiates blood sugar so it can be used as a fuel by the body. It initiates the stored sugars or glycogen to release their sugars. And it actually releases fat into the system because it in turn stimulates another enzyme called hormone-sensitive lipase, which works in opposition to the storage enzyme called called lipoprotein lipase. So number one, it stimulates the proper hormonal response conducive to fat burning instead of fat storage. Another thing that protein does is it helps us maintain and grow new muscle tissue. And muscle, as I mentioned earlier, is the key metabolic engine of the human body. The more muscle tissue we have and the more metabolically active that muscle tissue is, the more calories we can naturally burn at rest. And the third way is through something called dietary thermogenesis. Thermogenesis is just a fancy way of saying body heat regulation. And all of us have to keep our body heat in a very tight regulatory pattern of approximately 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. That's basically our core temperature. Thermogenesis is a way of wasting calories, so to speak, and we have to understand that every time we consume food, our core temperature rises slightly. Now, not all foods are created equal in their ability to raise that core temperature. For instance, when we take in fats, we only raise the thermogenic value by about 3%. Carbohydrates raise it by about 12%, but proteins in some studies have been able to increase the thermic or the calorie burning effect by the body by up to 20%. And that's because it's a little harder for the body to extract and utilize the amino acids or the building blocks from that protein, so it has to work harder and we actually burn more calories. So in a very real sense, it increases the thermogenic effect of the body.
Now, the average woman out there, say 25, 35, 45, carrying some extra body fat, how many grams of protein would she be eating a day on average? Is she getting enough protein?
You know, Corey, that's very interesting because much of my research, especially when I was writing Fat Wars and BioAge, I looked into the protein intake, and what I found was actually quite alarming. As a matter of fact, according to the National Research Council in North America, this is going back a little less than 10 years ago, the average dietary intake in North America was approximately 46% coming in from very high glycemic or fast-releasing processed carbohydrates. This literally is the staple of our diets, these, you know, the wrong types of foods that are setting the wrong hormonal environment up that is, you know, causing us to store fat all day long and all night long. According to that same study, 43% of our dietary intake was in the form of the wrong types of fats, mostly saturated fats, and trans fats, which are what I call the Frankenstein fats because they've been altered by man. And thirdly, only 11% of our dietary intake in North America, this is mostly women, comes in the form of proteins. And most of those proteins, as you have often mentioned, I know in your lectures, are overcooked, meaning that they are denatured in value. They're not of the same value to the human body. So in other words, not only are we not getting enough protein, and women are notorious for this, but we're not even getting, you know, high enough quality proteins on top of that. And I think this is why it's very important for both women and men to learn about supplementary forms of protein, whether it is a soy protein isolate or whether it is a whey protein isolate. What is going to happen is if they learn to make these, you know, very high-valued protein shakes, and I'm not talking about just mixing protein into a shake. I'm talking about making a meal replacement by using the three macronutrients, using that protein source as the protein, taking something like fresh or frozen berries, because berries are very low glycemically valued foods, but they also contain some of the highest antioxidant potential for the body. So in a very real sense, they stop a lot of the damaging processes that go on in the body. And I also mentioned that people should be taking in, obviously, the essential fatty acids, because we've become fat phobics in North America, especially over the last 10 years. You should not be afraid of fat. You have to learn that the brain is 60% fat, and fat covers every single one of your 100 trillion plus cells. And if you were going to strip that fat or those lipid membranes off of every one of your 100 trillion plus cells, you would literally cover the circumference of about 10 football fields. That's how important fat is to the body. So when I talk about mixing the protein with the carbohydrates and the fats, I'm saying people should do that once to twice a day just to make sure they're getting enough high-quality protein in their diet.
Now, what about the athlete? Let's say somebody is relatively lean and they're involved in sport, but they want to get really lean because we know that, you know, muscle contracts and generates velocity and fat doesn't contract and it's kind of like a dead weight.
Mm-hmm.
These principles that you discuss in your book, they can be applied to the athletes at every level, can't they?
Absolutely, Corey. Definitely. Because we have to understand that, you know, an athlete's body is just functioning at a higher capacity, meaning that, you know, the athlete is going to have a higher basal metabolic rate. The rate at which that person burns calories in the resting position is going to be much higher than a person that does not exercise or that just exercises moderately. Therefore, all they'd have to do is increase their caloric consumption, making sure that they are taking in enough protein for their lean body percentage. Remember, fat is inert. This, you know, consensus that so many people have been following over the last few years, 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, is false. We have to understand that, you know, many of us are carrying way too much body fat percentage on our frames. Why would you feed the very substance that is causing most of the problems in your body, and that is fat? Fat does not require any more fuel. It's a storage container. You don't want to feed fat anymore. So what you want to do is you want to find out what your lean body percentage is, and you want to feed the muscle tissue of the body based on how much lean body percentage you have on your frame. That will dictate how much protein you should be taking in and how many calories you should be taking in general.
Well, what method of body composition analysis do you prefer or do you recommend to people?
Well, I think, you know, it really depends on the practitioner. I think if you have a practitioner that really knows what they're doing, then a caliper, skin caliper method would be fine if this person has, you know, done this long enough and has, you know, in a clinical setting. However, there are, you know, better sources that are much more reliable. One is electrical bioimpedance. If it's done at the same time, you know, every time you test the person, and as long as you make sure that, you know, the person's water content is relatively stable, you're going to get a very accurate reading. There's also another technology which is called Futurex technology, and that is infrared, which is, in my opinion, it's even a little more reliable than the bioimpedances.
Now, you've written another book. It's an excellent book called BioAge, 10 Steps to a Younger You. What do you mean by BioAge?
Well, you know, BioAge is just an abbreviation for biological aging. In other words, you know, people measure their age on a chronological level. I'm 1 year older, I have one more candle on my birthday cake, therefore, you know, I'm that much closer to death. And that's not how the body works. The real magic lies in your biological age or your bio age, which really refers to the way you look. You know, how do you look today? How do you feel today? And how are you performing? And understand that everything you do in your life, every meal you eat, every thought you think, every exercise you do or don't do for that matter, all of these lifestyle factors have an impact on the biological aging of the body. So therefore, the quality of your life and how long you live really is mostly up to you, which is really the whole premise of BioAge. You have a say in your, you know, cellular makeup. And as I mentioned at the very beginning, that I had this propensity in my, you know, in my biological heritage to cancer, Corey, this doesn't mean that I have to succumb to cancer, because we know that, you know, genetic outcome based on different types of influences, such as lifestyle influences, dietary influences, environmental influences, really may only account, if you have this genetic predisposition to a disease, by about 20% of the outcome of that disease. In other words, you have a say in how your genes are going to function properly, and this is really what is called your phenotype, or the way in which your genes express themselves. In science, we say that your genetic structure is pluripotential. In other words, it has a never-ending potential to change because of these three factors.
That's amazing. That's absolutely wonderful. Now, I just can't believe how fast and quickly the time's going by here. We're just about out of time. But now, where can people find out where to buy your books? Do you have a website that they can go to?
I do, Corey. And I have a free newsletter for anybody that comes into the site. All they have to do is type in their email address, and we'll send that off to them, as well as a free 7 steps to transformation. It's www.fatwars.com.
And that's spelled F-A-T-W-A-R-S, just
Correct.
Like the book. Well, I guess we're out of time, and I'll just remind everyone out there that they should get their hands on these books. It's a great read. There's some invaluable information. You've also got a number of other experts participating in your drive to inform people and provide this invaluable information. Do you have any final parting words for our listeners, Brad?
Absolutely. I want everybody to realize that, you know, we are definitely all governed by our actions, and that is one action at a time. And we have to understand that our actions come from our feelings. So people should be assessing where their feelings are coming from, because those feelings are starting from their thoughts. So when you change your thinking, you literally change your world.
Very well said, Brad. Brad, thanks very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, Corey, you know, I'm a huge fan of yours. You know that. I've always told you that. And I think what you're doing is absolutely incredible for, you know, not only Canada, but basically for the entire world.
Thanks so much. I can't wait to have you back on SNU, Brad.
Thanks very much, Corey.
Take care.
This concludes this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. We hope you have enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview. SNU is a division of Holly Health Services located in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada. For information regarding subscription to SNU and Corey's Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, please visit our website at www.coreyhawley.com. This is Lisa Hawley, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.